SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two. First day back from vacation. There's no vacation for Mark Cassie. And, you know, I hadn't thought about it until just there at the end of the segment with Brad Cox. But there was a harmony because, of course, Brad was knocking on the door looking for his first grade one. And now those dominoes have really started to fall. And Mark Cassie, of course, tried for many years to get that elusive first Queen's Plate. Now he's got a pair of Queen's Plates, and certainly on an annual basis, we'll keep the pressure on, and we'll have opportunities going forward. This one, a little special, though, because Wonder Godot, frankly, became a little bit of a house horse around these parts right from early on when Mark told you about her and her potential. And that potential certainly, you know, been on display her whole career. And other than a rough trip in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies, she has acquitted herself famously. And the big domestic grade one down the road probably yet, but a Queen's Plate is a Queen's Plate. And for Mark Cassie and for Johnny V and Gary Barber, Wonder Godot's win on Saturday in the Queen's Plate, just smashing. Mark, congratulations.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Steve.
This one, you know, they're all going to be special Queen's Plates, but this filly who, you know, you've had to tinker with, who you've had, you know, plenty of things behind the scenes working against you, then she's gone out and run so well, so often. For her to get this kind of win, I know I heard from you and from Gary Barber that you're just happy for the horse. I mean, the horse doesn't realize it, but that's a part of this.
Oh, absolutely. You know, when you have a filly as talented as she is, you are frustrated for her. And I've said that all along. You know, like with Teppan, many times you're asked about it with her pressure with Teppan. The pressure isn't, it's you don't want to let Teppan down, you know. You don't want to let the horses down. And, you know, I think it's been a lot of things. She's been very unlucky. You know, she could have easily have won her last four races. The Queen's Plate was good. It was, everything went right for her that day, and that's something that hasn't happened, you know, for her in the past.
The difficulties that came out of this race in terms of, you know, some of her physical elements and some of the things that you guys have had to deal with, and then the blinkers and, you know, adding just that little nuance to get her past a final horse in the late stages. Talk about that part.
Well, I know, you know, there's been a lot said about the blinkers, and maybe they helped her. Maybe they didn't. I'm not convinced of that. If you go back, let's go back three races to the four races to the Fantasy. I think she ran almost 80 feet farther than the winner and got beat a nose. I think, or 70 feet, that in itself, you know, that can get anybody beat. The Kentucky Oaks was a very interesting race in that, you know, Johnny said the bump wasn't as big a deal as, and I think I mentioned this to you before, Johnny said we lost the race at the 5/16 pole when horse clipped heels and he had to check her. She's a big filly, and when she gets her momentum going, she's not real quick. But when she gets it going, I don't think there's a whole lot of three-year-olds out there that can run with her late. And the other day, he got her rolling, and she, you know, she just kept going. The farther they go to, Steve, the better she is. She just goes and goes and goes. She's truly Wonder Woman.
Well, it's funny because we brought up the big 3-year-old filly in Brad Cox's barn, and the mile and a quarter in the Alabama, and I've discussed it with you too. I mean, it was one of those kinds of races that you expected, you know, you weren't thinking about early on, but you know, when you get to this time on the calendar, and especially coming off of a mile and a quarter win, it becomes, you know, pretty apparent. But in the meantime, we'll save that for next. Let's talk about Saturday and going into the race and what the plan was. You seemed very deliberate when you took the 11. I watched the draw, and I'm glad I hung in and through the interminable introduction. And you had options to go a little further inside, but you took the 11 with her. Start there.
Well, as much as winning the Queen's Plate was gratifying, there was a lot of disappointment there as well. The race did not unfold the way that I had hoped it would. It was a very strange race in that I had figured Telekinesis would be up front, or not up front, but close. I thought there'd be more speed from down on the inside. And I know, you know, Patrick Husband's taken some heat for being out on the lead, but if you watch, the horse broke fairly well. And he was kind of sitting there for a little first bit, waiting for somebody to go. And I was absolutely shocked to see Flo up on Nippawa. And then outside of him, you've got Avier. I don't know. I'm not really sure what those two guys were thinking. So it was very frustrating for me in that the first quarter went well. The second quarter was a killer for Telekinesis. You know, but I think through it all, it was extremely fast paced. And I think through that, though, you have to look. Wonder Godot was 2 lengths off the lead, and she just kept going. So, I mean, she proved herself as truly the best. And as far as the post position, I just didn't want her. I didn't want the same thing to happen to her that happened to Dixie Moon. I didn't want her getting all cramped up down inside. I just thought Johnny could pick his position better from the outside.
Well, I mentioned earlier when I kind of covered Queen's Plate Day that when she cruised up, I mean, she basically brought Johnny to the leaders after sitting very comfortably behind the early pace on the backstretch. And when she cruised up, you could tell it was just over. Everybody else was riding their horse, and Johnny was cruising. And off the turn, she just powered away.
She was impressive. I'll say that for her. And, you know, like I said, for her, the farther the better. It really doesn't matter.
Well, it had to feel good knowing at the eighth pole that something unusual was going to have to happen for her to lose. You weren't going to have to worry about drawing even and getting by at the wire. This one was not a laugher per se, but it was certainly one of those, you know, parades down the stretch. Talk about
it was definitely nice. It was hot. I mean, it was really hot, but the nice thing about it was also to have Gary. Gary was standing beside me. He wasn't there for Lexi Lou, but, you know, Gary has been so instrumental in our success over the last 5 or 6 years. And here's a guy that, if I have an idea, he's usually in. And you know, I can still remember the phone call when she was in the sale talking to him and saying, I told him, I said, I see this filly and I think she's special. And then we bought her, we got her home, and I called him maybe 2 weeks later and I said, Gary, I think this is a serious filly. And it's nice. You're wrong so many times, so it's nice to be right sometimes.
Well, she adds really more than adds. I mean, she really enhances herself, and I know how much it meant to Gary Barber as well. Gary had a, and you both had a special day Saturday, including Lexi Liu's sibling breaking the maiden in the second start.
She could be a pretty good filly. That filly's going to get better and better.
Now, and that one is sailing by. Before we talk about the other winners and also Holding Gold, who had a little trouble, and we'll have to wait for an opportunity. But what do you foresee in terms of the where you want to spot Wonder Godot for the summer?
Well, as long as I think you mentioned something earlier. It might not have been the Alabama may not have been on our radar, but now it is. It's always been on our radar. It's something we've always felt like a mile and a quarter was her game, and we do. You know, Gary is a strategizer, as am I, and so we plan out long. We make long term goals, and that's always been one of our goals. As far as what we're going to do, as long as she's happy and healthy, she's going to run in the Prince of Wales, which is the second leg of the Canadian Triple Crown of Fort Erie, going a mile and 3/16 on the dirt. And I think that'll set her up really nice for the Alabama. So that is our goal currently. We feel also that if she can stay happy and healthy, we think the Breeders' Cup is definitely within her reach. We already know she likes Churchill Downs. We know the distance isn't going to be a problem.
Got to ask the obvious question. If she wins Tuesday and is now a dual classic winner in terms of Queen's Plate and Prince of Wales, how hard is it going to be not to run in the Breeders?
Well, that'll be, you know, that's something Gary and I'll talk about. But as nice as it would be to win the Canadian Triple Crown, like I said, the Alabama has been a long time goal
sure.
of ours.
No doubt.
So, as hard as it would be not to run in the Breeders, I would think that we'll still go to the Alabama.
Well, there you go. And before we talk about the other horses, I do want, because I know you'll appreciate me mentioning it, I can't help but laud John Ross and Ahead by a Century and the terrific effort turned in by that colt to be second behind you.
John Ross is a great, great horseman.
Yep.
I have just the highest regards for him. As you may know, that's who we bought Lexi Liu off of. And John is, truly a great horseman. And I would agree with you. That horse ran extremely well.
Well, another Queen's Plate for you. And you got, I don't know if Atfield is nervous yet. But
I don't think so.
But
I don't even know. I think he has five. We got a long ways to go. But that doesn't mean we won't try. I can tell you.
Well, it's not. He's like Lucas. It's not like Roger's going anywhere.
No, I think I don't know what the owner's standings are, but we may try to do that for Gary Barber just to see. I think Gary's the first owner ever to have two fillies win the.
That would make sense. That would
the Queen's Plate. He's always, we do buy a few colts and geldings, but he is a fillies man, as you know. I mean, we have, I have four or five outstanding fillies for Gary right now, and have had some really good ones in the past. Catch a Glimpse.
Sure.
Of course, we had Salty. Salty is Salty's going to be a brood mare now. So, but we also, we've got Win the War and Road to Victory. So he's got some good fillies.
Well, let's catch up on a few of the other performers, because we already mentioned Sailing By, and she wins in her second career start. You started the whole day off with what looks to be a pretty nice Lemon Drop Kid filly, in fact, for Barbara Banky, that Limonea.
She is. I think she's a really nice filly, because you really aren't seeing what she wants to do. Obviously, her goal later down the line will be the Natalma. I mean, mile on the grass. She's going to just excel on the grass, I'm sure. And it was nice. Barbara was there and with the Stone Street team. And so it was nice to get a victory for them.
Well, got to also mention, you put an assault in on the Charlie Barley and ran first, third, fifth, and seventh.
Yeah, I wanted, it's that time. We have some horses that have had success in Toronto, but it's now that time to start deciding if we have somebody that we can go south of the border with. And I think we found him. I think Ride a Comet is a serious horse. I don't know if you know that, but he's a half brother to Taprit. But it's funny because Johnny rode the race for us, and he said he was sitting next to Patrick, and they kind of looked at each other, and he said the next thing he looked up, Patrick was gone. And he said that horse, he was impressive. So the plan is to take him to Saratoga for the Hall of Fame.
Nice. And he's 3-for-4 this year, and you mentioned Taprit, who we'll see this weekend at Belmont.
He's undefeated on the grass, though, yes.
Yeah, and being out of Appealing Zofie, very nice. Jack Oxley and Len Riggio are partnered. Are they together on any other horses, or is this the only
That what happened was that Colt was in the sale. We bought him at OBS, and after we bought him, they said they would like to stay in for part. And,
nice.
Mr. Oxley said, of course. And so that partnership was formed just then, and that's the only horse they have.
That's cool. Len Riggio, a terrific terrific partner to have, absolutely. Going to ask you as well about Holding Gold. And this was tough because I actually watched the race again this morning because I was going to talk to Brad Cox, and I wanted to see the trips again a week later. And, gosh, Holding Gold, there's no doubt that Long on Value got the jump. And meantime, Holding Gold and Johnny had to idle for about a 16th of a mile.
Yeah, that one was frustrating because it's been I've kind of felt like Holding Gold hadn't really come back to himself yet, but you could see him warming up before the race, and you knew that he was on his game. And afterwards, Johnny just apologized, said he owed us one. And then after the Queen's played, he said, does that make up for it? And I said, well, kind of.
That's great.
I obviously, Charlotte, Mrs. Weber has been, it would have been nice. It's a homebred. It was a grade one winning your in. So it was frustrating. Take nothing away from Brad and his horse, but you won't ever get me to believe that we didn't run the best horse in the race. So, but that happens. Sometimes you win by that way, and sometimes you lose that way. So we'll go on.
Well, and when you have a horse in turf sprints that's going to come from off the pace, there's obviously two things that can go wrong. There cannot be enough pace in front, or there can be traffic. And he seems to if there's pace, he finds trouble. If there's no pace, he comes close. Find his spot.
The problem with Holding Gold is he's about a 7-8 specialist. 5.5 is a little short for him. 5/8 is definitely short, too short for him. I thought the 3/4 with the big, you know, big turn. He doesn't go, he struggles around the turns, so that gives him a little bit, you know, he's always catching up down the lane. And I thought, well, with the 3/8 mile stretch, that, you know, that would benefit him at Woodbine. And so anyway, so now we're back to trying to probably kind of go out of our element a little. We're probably going to run into Troy, I think it is, at Saratoga, 5.5. But that tends to be a little short for him.
Well, he'll find his right formula. I want to ask you, before I bring up a couple of other two-year-olds that are coming up to debuts, I want to ask you about one other interesting winner that may have kind of gone under the radar, and that was that firster, Tapping Pearl, the Tappet filly for Barbara Banky. That was, the day before or Thursday before?
Right, it was it Friday, I believe it was.
Okay.
Yeah, there wasn't much said about her. I agree with you, but she's a horse, you know, as anybody knows with us, David Carroll keeps most of our young horses at Keeneland, and he's been raving about her for a long time. He's told me that she was special, and, you know, for us, we don't necessarily put a lot of emphasis on winning first time. And so they usually move forward from that, but her race was good. She earned herself a ticket to Saratoga. I don't know whether she'll run in the Schuylerville or the Adirondack. Right now we're looking also at running Eye in the Sky in the Schuylerville. And then I don't know if you got to see her, but we had a filly win at Gulfstream that is, I think, could be really something special. Her name's Catherine the Great by Uncaptured. She won by 10 and ran an 80 buyer. She's also on her way to Saratoga.
Very nice. So there's three right there. Tapping Pearl, Eye in the Sky, Catherine Great. I want to ask you about two horses, our friend John in New York, who does a great job keeping tabs. And speaking of Jack Oxley, All-American Hero, 47-2 gate work, about 10 days ago, an OBS purchase, $400,000 out of the April sale, a hard spun, and looks like he may be worth tracking.
He is, he acts like he could be really something special. He's on his way to Saratoga as well. And then the horse that I tell you that to me has been probably the most impressive two-year-old winner so far this year for us is Dreammaker. He breathes exceptionally well this morning, and he is going to go in the Saratoga Special, I think it is, or the Sanford, whichever.
The first one, not the second. Okay. What about a horse that happened to be tracking anyway? John asked about Real Money. And this is a horse that we talked about during the sales season because Pat Hoppel made a tremendous score. As hardworking and as quiet a horseman. when you look up Taciturn in the it's Pat Hoppel's picture, and he's the one. Right? How's Real Money coming?
It's good. He had a strange thing kind of happen to him. We don't know whether he got bit by something but his leg blew up and it was blown up for a couple days, I guess about 2 weeks ago. Had to give him a couple days off. He's fine now, and he too is on his way to Saratoga.
Well, he was a $32,000 yearling that Hoppel bought.
By the way, I was the underbidder on him for $32,000.
Were you really?
Yes. I bet $30,000 on him to buy for my wife.
So you owe her one.
Yeah. We're not saying much about that. But, yeah, so That horse has been on my radar for some time.
Well, and this was the horse that fetched $675,000 at OBS in March, and it sort of announced real solution as a sire to watch, and the latest Ramsey Stallion success, because he had a bunch of good sellers, but this was the real eye opener. But you were hip to him in September the year before.
I think he's just an outstanding looking colt. I thought he went really well. I mean, probably when the dust clears, he's probably going to be a really good turf horse. But that's, way anymore. We've had such we've had great success with our turf horses. So, I'm hoping to get him started up at Saratoga.
Nice. Well, there's so many horses we could throw at you. And, coming up this weekend, let's at least mention Geo Game. You waited to run her in the Delaware Oaks, and that ended up being a pretty serious group, it looks like, for Saturday.
It is. It's not easy. We got a little unlucky with our draw. Would have liked to have been more inside and use our speed. So Julian's going to have to try to work out a trip. But she's an improving filly. It was kind of, I had her also in the Mother Goose, but opted to run Road to Victory. I would have liked to have given Road to Victory the extra week, but my feeling is that Delaware can be a little deep and tiring, and I thought, I just wasn't sure that Road to Victory would like the going there, so we swapped and decided to go with Geo Game there. But you're right, it's not an easy spot.
Well, you mentioned, speaking of Road to Victory, it certainly was a tough assignment under the conditions, the way the Mother Goose came up last Saturday. What thoughts coming out?
Well, I was kind of between a rock and a hard place there. She, it's so tough to compete at the highest level, and when you're not, it's tough to get to that fitness level. So you're always going to, especially early on, you're going to, it's just not going to be easy. And I thought she ran well. Obviously, the winner was very impressive. Haven't really come up with a plan yet for her. I just, more importantly, wanted to let her get over those first two races. The 3 weeks back, I knew was going to be a little hard on her. One thing about her, she can run on dirt, she can run on grass. So she may end up back on the grass. Haven't really worried about it much. Probably going to get her up to Saratoga and see how she trains and go from there.
Well, Mark Cassie, always a pleasure, and there's plenty the things we'll look forward to talking to you about as the summer unfolds. I guess I found the horse that you did buy for Tina instead, and that's Jolie's Bay, Jolie Bay, who runs tomorrow at Belmont. Was that the replacement for?
Well, actually, we went down. That would have been, yeah. We bought her. Yeah, we may not have bought her had we bought
the Real Solution.
Real Solution, but I have to tell you that was, she came. We bought. We Tina and I, my wife and I, went to the October sale in Ocala, and we bought three or four horses for her, and it turned out Eye in the Sky was one of them. So and then we sold her to Gary Barber. So she's going to run in the Scarletville. So I can't really complain much. Jolie Bay, I think Jolie Bay is, she's just crying out to run farther. She's a talented filly. She is going to draw in. They notified me. So she's on the AEs at Belmont that she is drawing in. So
nice.
I think she's a filly that's going to get better as she runs farther.
Well, this is part of He's Had Enough's first two-year-olds and sire to watch. I mean, a Florida stallion that has got real potential.
Most definitely.
Mark Cassie, two Queen's plates now, and so many more exciting spots to look forward to in the second half of the year. And I appreciate it, Mark. We'll see you soon.
All right. Well, you have a good day. Thank
Mark
you.
Cassie, everybody. And can ask him anything, and always fun to survey the barn. And you got a real preview into the summer, particularly Phillies, when it comes to those three. How about that? Tapping Pearl, Catherine the Great, Eye in the Sky, all headed for the Saratoga 2-year-old Philly Stakes, and Dream Maker as well for the Sanford on the boys' side, plus a couple of unraced babies. Real money and All-American hero, courtesy of our friend John in New York, ever popular, one of the listenership's favorite. I don't know if John realizes how much they love him on Twitter. I love it. Bottom of the hour is past us, and Steve Haskin is in front of us. We'll check in with Haskin, what he's been up to through the July 4th holiday, and undoubtedly looking forward to the weekend, the Dwyer, the Suburban, the Sprint Championship, and the Belmont Oaks and Derby. And haven't talked about those cards, those races yet on the Big Stars and Stripes card, but it came up great. And I think we're going to go down, actually. And we've got 3 2-year-olds of our own that are now at Belmont, and looking forward to seeing them and checking them out under tack and as they get ready themselves for Saratoga. I'll tell you about them later, or maybe tomorrow instead, or certainly early next week. We got names for them, all approved, and we'll tell you about those. We're pretty excited, all coming out of the OBS sale a couple of weeks ago. Back after this, Steve Haskin, who has got, a very busy Saratoga schedule for himself. In fact, the Haskin suite is ready at the Friedbergs. And in fact, you know, I think I forgot Avi's birthday the other day. Happy birthday, Avi Friedberg. Right. I think I forgot to wish Avi a happy birthday. Avi and Rhoda, of course. And they're on Fifth Avenue. They've got one of the prime viewing spots, watching the action on the Oklahoma. Back after this with Haskin.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Do you want unlimited access to handicapping without exorbitant prices? Then BrizNet.com has you covered with a variety of plans for past performances, pedigree, and raw data. The BrizNet.com Performance Plan offers unlimited PDF past performances for just $75 per month and is available at BrizNet.com/PP. American Produce Records Online puts the pedigrees of nearly 1 million dams and more than 2 million foals at your fingertips, plus sire stats, for only $275 per year and is available at BrizNet.com/APR. The BrizNet.com data plan offers unlimited access to race day data files, perfect for handicappers with their own database or to plug into other people's programs. The data plan is just $125 per month. Visit BrizNet.com for all this information and more, and discover why BrizNet.com is the handicapper's edge.
Porchbills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Your barn is successful. Your program is tried and true. However, there are a few horses that aren't responding in the way you'd like. Does this sound familiar? Well, let Biomedical Research Labs help change that. Our clinically proven products will help your equine athletes become their very best. I guarantee it. This is Joseph Vellante. To learn more, contact me at 215-501-6880 and visit brlscience.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
Now, back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Used to keep it cool, used to be a fool, all about the bouncing master. Watch it on the news, what you gonna do? I could hit refresh and forget. Used to keep it cool. Should I keep it light, stay out of the fight? No one's gonna listen to me. If I write a song, preaching what is wrong, will they let me sing on TV? Should I keep it light? Is that right?
We're back at the races. AJR, if you haven't heard that, burn the house down. And certainly, it's 10:45, and I think it's already 90-something degrees again. I thought this was going to break. We're heading, supposedly, 80s coming. So just hope for it, because this has been something. Legitimately steamy. And hot. When you see in this area, in Saratoga area, you see 90s early evening, 90s mid-morning, forget it. I mean, that's as... And the funny thing is, with this intense period, usually by now we've had some of the blowout storms, the famous Saratoga thunderstorms that come ripping through. But we really have not, I mean, I'm on vacation the whole period. I mean, could not have been nicer. And I'm about as tanned as it's like when I go to Florida and I end up all burnt up, which I don't mind though. I especially when it's, your first, this past winter didn't get a chance to kind of burn off the winter, kind of nice to get that, a couple of layers of white dead winter skin off of you, right? Steve Haskins is going to join us. I don't think of Steve as a kind of guy that tans much. It makes me think of the Woody Allen line: "I don't tan, I stroke." Steve, that's a fair statement, right? You're not. I don't think of you as somebody that sports a tan too often.
I get a tan from my den lamp.
That Sylvania 60-watt glow?
Yeah, 60 watts, yes. I've even known to get a tan in 40 watts. When I go out on a sunny day, by the way, Joan always says, "How can you wear a long sleeve today?" I says, "Because I don't like to get my arms red 2 seconds after I leave." I hate to say it, but I am a bit pale.
Well,
and you know what? As you get older, you get paler.
Well, most writers pale by comparison, but bump bump.
Let's put it this way, by the way. If you see me, picture a lake with one white cap. So if I was swimming in a lake, picture an ocean with just one white cap. That white cap would
be you.
Yes. I'm the white cap in the lake or the swimming pool.
Well, we're looking forward to your summer up here. How many visits are you guys planning?
Right now, we are planning 3 visits. The biggest one, obviously, is the first one.
July 25th. Actually, I'm going up by myself on July 25th because Joan is flying to Nebraska on the 18th to spend a week with Mandy and Theo and nice. And help Mandy move. They're moving to another apartment. And then on the 25th, Mandy and Theo fly to Saratoga, and I will meet them up there, and we'll have like 5 days.
Nice.
With our grandson. The first time we saw him, he was just a, you know, crying, sleeping baby, but now he's like a little person. He was got a personality, so looking forward to it. Well, you know, what we've seen him is basically is, well, you know, thank goodness for FaceTime. So we had a nice little visit with him last night on FaceTime. So we'll be going up there for a week, and that's going to be a lot of fun.
Very good. Well, looking forward to getting you up here.
And then we've got two other visits after that. So I would like the funny thing is that I would like to obviously go to Monmouth for the Haskell, but that's the weekend we'll be up there. So I'll misjustify if he runs there. And then we never go up for the Travers. It's just too crazy, and there's no place to stay up there for that. So we always pass that. So I'll have to pass on Justify in both those summer races. Catch him on TV.
Well, it should be the way things are positioned. We don't even have to wait for Haskell and for Travers and Jim Dandy and so forth. Just as quick as Saturday, Steve, looking at the Dwyer, and I have only referenced a little bit, you know, what a nice card it came out to be, the Stars and Stripes. Some horses ended up, you know, jumping into the fray here that we hadn't expected necessarily, or hadn't been at least on the, you know, the potential, the list of probables. And the Dwyer, here's Mendelssohn back, and not just Mendelssohn, but Seahenge comes back as well, and has got some horses waiting, laying in wait, including Noble Indy and Rugby Man and Firenze Fire cutting back to the one turn mile, Seven Trumpets, who might be in the right, you know, moving in the right way, and then there's Al Gold with the hysterically named Fixed Income Larry, which we've had a lot of fun with. The Dwyer should be pretty entertaining.
I'm surprised that's not a Seth Klarman horse. Now, you realize, do you realize the thing I find fascinating about the Dwyer is that if you look at the two big-name horses in there, one of which is, you know, Noble Indy, who had won the Louisiana Derby, he's coming off his last two races. He was beaten a total of 96 lengths in his last two races. His Louisiana Derby winner. And the other big horse, as you mentioned, is Mendelssohn, who in his last start was beaten 73 legs. So, I mean, the two favorites in this race combined have been beaten by 170 lengths in their last three starts.
What do you make of this group and the potential for, you know, somebody, you know, to kind of emerge? I mean, granted, Dwyer position now as a prep for the summer opportunities, but there's some names here that are not going to get as much attention as they probably deserve. And I thought this came up pretty interesting. And I don't know what I'm haven't really, I got a handicap this afternoon because we've got our Stats Race Lens seminar at 6. I got to make some decisions.
Mm-hmm. Well, the horse that obviously is intriguing is Mendelssohn. I mean, I would love to see him run back to his UAE Derby. I mean, it's still, I would say, I don't know if anybody could name a race more impressive than that. I mean, to win by over 18 lengths, beating a pretty decent field. So, you know, there was a lot of excitement generated around this horse. He was only 6-1 in the Derby, and everybody was talking about him, you know, and another son of Scat Daddy to boot. So, you know, to see him come back in this race, I don't know how he'll fare at a mile and a 16th. You know, he has won at a mile, but it'll be interesting to see how he comes back. If he comes back resembling anything close to the Mendelsohn we saw in the UAE Derby, then, you know, then things are going to start getting interesting. You know, as it is, there's still a lot of very interesting three-year-olds that are going to be pointing for the Haskell and the Travers. You know, I don't know what's going to be. It's not going to be, you know, walk in the park the way, let's say, people thought it was going to be for American Pharoah, you know, which the Haskell was. But, you know, he managed to get beat in the Travers. It's not easy to win both those races. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. But, you know, I'm curious to see what happens with Rugby Man. They're putting the blinkers on him. He just got beat in his last start. Granted, he didn't get beat by a really exciting horse. It was kind of a surprise horse that beat him, that Fletcher horse. But it was only his third start. And I'm curious, you know, and if he runs anywhere back to his maiden victory, although it was in the mud, but he won by 14 lengths, it'll be interesting to see how he fares here. But again, you know, you got Noble Indy looking to come back. I don't know what to expect from Seahenge. I mean, he really hasn't shown that he's in the same class as Mendelsohn. He did finish third to him in that Patton Stakes at Dundalk. But, you know, he got absolutely trounced in the UAE Derby, and then couldn't handle the slop at all in the Pat Day Mile. So, you know, it looks like it could be an interesting race. You know, and if you look at the 3-year olds too, by the way, I think there's some pretty interesting horses running in the Iowa Derby. You know, it's not a great field, but it'll be interesting to see if any of these horses can emerge. You know, they haven't been the most consistent bunch. You know, High North has thrown in some big races. The Tabulator's thrown in some big races. Dale Roman always seems to have a horse come out of nowhere that you never even heard of. But he's got an undefeated horse that actually I thought ran a very, very impressive race at Churchill last time towards Mr. Freeze. We really don't know how good he is. He's only won his last two starts. Steve Asmussen's got a horse coming off the prep race, the Prairie Mile, with Lionite. So, you know, Peter Urton, by the way, who's very, very dangerous with his shippers coming in from California with a horse who just broke his maiden going 6 furlongs. So, again, you know, I mean, it's not a great field by any means, but, you know, whenever you get these 3-year-old stakes at this time of the year, it's always interesting to see what's going to emerge from them. But listen, you know, not only are we looking for the return of Justify, we're also looking for the return of Good Magic too. You know, people forget. And I think there are several horses that we're going to see the best of. I mean, we have not even come close to me to seeing the best of Hofburg. And I think he's ready to emerge as a star. I think, you know, Tenfold certainly can excuse, you know, the Belmont, but, you know, he runs back to his Preakness. He's an emerging star. A lot of lightly raced horses this year that should be coming into their own, including Justify. Well, I don't think we've seen anywhere near his best. So, you know, we could be in for a treat this summer. And like I said, if Mendelsohn should bounce back and run big and entwire, then that's going to be a heck of a showdown wherever they meet, whether they wait for the Travers or run. Well, the one thing about Aidan O'Brien, he's not afraid to run his horses. I mean, he's running a horse this weekend at Belmont Park who not only has ran at Royal Ascot, but has run since Royal Ascot. He's making a second start since Royal Ascot. So one thing about Aidan O'Brien is that he's not afraid to run on short rest, which is very unusual for, you know, not typical of your European trainers. But, you know, listen, racing has changed. You know, we see all these big weekends. where all the stakes are crammed in. You look at Belmont Week, between Belmont Weekend and this coming and this weekend, you know, just about other than the Mother Goose, every single major stake race was crammed into 2 weekends. So that's why you look through a lot of June, and you really, you know, you had no stakes on the Saturday, because there's so many to go around, and they run them on these two big weekends. So listen, yeah. I hope they get a good crowd. I think the races are intriguing. I think the Belmont Derby and the Belmont Oaks have emerged as major races with a lot of European participation. I mean, there's not a lot for the 3 year olds in Europe now. Yeah, unless you got a major star who you can appoint for the King George at the end of July. But any decent 3 year old that you have, colt or filly, it's hard to pass up a Grade One $1 million race. So that's why we've seen European horses improve every year.
Now, you mentioned the Belmont Derby, and you know, in addition to the obvious major names when it comes to Hawkish and Catholic Boy and Analyze It, my boy Jack comes back to the grass here, and I think I saw where DeSormo says, you know, he's trying this spot, and then there's every opportunity to come back to the dirt for the, you know, for the major summer assignments for 3 year olds. And when it comes to the fillies group, you really got virtually all the 3 year old fillies that you kind of wanted. Significant form back against the La Signore for Brian Lynch, together, you know, out of the Wonder Again. Toinette, who I really came to like going into the Edgewood. Fatal Beret in here. That Mighty Scarlet looks like, you know, she's got plenty of upside yet. Michael McCarthy shows up with Paved, and there's a lot going on in here. Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, she's won four in a row.
Yep.
Don't forget, looking at the Europeans, we've got a filly, you know, Capital Temptress, who's beaten a half a length in the French 1,000 Guineas, ran in the Breeders' Cup last year, finished seventh, but was beaten only a little over four lengths, and also won in the Talmud Woodbine. So this filly has traveled several times already, and
yep.
she looks like she could be a very good filly. The one thing about the Belmont Derby and the Belmont Oaks, you know, everybody says, oh, it's a great handicapping race. I don't think it's a great handicapping race because I don't have no clue who's going to win it. You know, to me, a great handicapping race is a horse that I said can't lose. But these are they're incredibly wide open, interesting races.
Yeah.
But, Belmont Derby, I'm curious to see what happens. I still can't figure out how Analyze blew that race in the Pennine Ridge. I mean, he looked like he was just going to draw off. I don't know if he just stopped, started looking around, or eased himself up, or Catholic Boy somehow came on again. But it's going to be interesting to see a rematch of both of those horses. We're talking about, you know, lightly raced up and comers. We've got another horse coming from France in there, King Star, who's won two out of his three starts with a second in the Group Three. It's coming off a very impressive win at Longchamp. You can't knock any of these horses. I mean, the Hawkish looked terrific winning the Penn Mile. Loved the way he accelerated in that race and drew off. I don't know if this race is going to be conducive to a horse coming as far back as he does, but it's great to have a horse like this that you can run in a $1 million race here and then bring him back in a $1 million race on the dirt, and he'll be just as effective in both races. Now, he hasn't run on the grass in a long time, but, you know, again, even in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf, where he finished seventh, he was only beaten three lengths. And before that, he was a gem of consistency. So, I mean, we know he loves it, but that was a different My Boy Jack. That's when he was basically running at nothing but mile races. And then they put him on the dirt, and he got rank, actually, in the Sham, and was right up close to the pace and, you know, tired to finish third, but, you know, he finished third to McKenzie. And ever since then, they've turned him into a deep closer, and he's run fantastic races. I actually thought he ran a terrific race in the Derby to come from as far back. He came from 19th in that race to finish 5th. I thought he ran a very good race, all things considered.
Agreed. Steve, I don't want to finish without including a conversation about the Suburban. And after some real question as to what was going to come together for the 132nd running, this ended up becoming quite intriguing. And for those that are looking forward to Justify, why not settle for his 5-year-old brother, the lieutenant, who comes to town? And of course, Opportunity, 2-for-2 at Belmont, and absolutely tremendous in the Brooklyn. But there's a little of everything in here. Dr. Dorr, who continues to be, on the ascent.
I'm going to assume that they're going to scratch him and run him in the Cornhusker. That's just a guess. I don't know if Baffert would want to run both horses.
No, I think he said he. I think I saw that he Marcus Hirsch tweeted that he's not running in Iowa.
Oh, okay. Okay, it'll be interesting.
The other day, I think Marcus said that both of the Bafferts. He also entered the Philly, and he didn't ship either in.
Okay, well I think that'll be good because it'll basically they complement each other very well because Dr. Dorr, is going to be right up on or close to the pace, so so he definitely is good enough to win this race on the front end. And for some reason, somebody goes out with him and he tires, then it sets it up perfectly for Opportunity. So I think that's going to be, very, very interesting. By the way, you do realize that this is the 50th anniversary of the great, unbelievable matchup, Dr. Fager, Damascus, and In Reality, in the Suburban Handicap, where he had the two favorites in the race, both carrying over 100. Yeah, the two favorites race carrying 133 and 132 pounds.
Hmm.
And then Dr. Fager equaled the track record. But that was an amazing race. I mean, Damascus made so many runs at him, and Damascus was short in that race. He had just come off an allowance race that he won easily, and he just got better with racing, and he wasn't quite 100% fit in that race. And actually, neither was Dr. Fager, because Dr. Fager had missed the Met Mile because he had a very bad case of colic. So they had to scratch him from that race. So he was trying to come back off of that. And still, I remember being, I was there that day, and what an amazing race. They went to third quarter in that race in 22-3. When Damascus had no choice but to go after Dr. Fager and just made like four different runs at him. And Dr. Fager would not let him get by and finally drew off. And actually, Damascus finished third in the race. And Boldauer, who was a very good horse owned by George Widener, came up to finish second. And then they had a rematch in the Brooklyn Handicap. And Damascus ran, since Brooklyn Handicap was 16 days later, and Damascus ran in between. And came back and broke Dr. Fager's track record. And they both went, when Dr. Fager was carrying 135 and Damascus carrying 130, this time Hedevar was in the race because Hedevar was scratched. And I remember, just going back a little in history, I remember sitting in the grandstand and, I would get there early and the grandstand was, trying to get, you get a seat because, you're going to get 55,000 people there on a Saturday or holidays, you'll get 60, maybe 70,000. And the anticipation, and In Reality, remember, had won the Carter and the Met Mile, so he was in top form. I remember sitting there, and I could hear the voice of Fred Capicella. Ladies and gentlemen, in the 7th race, number 1A, Hedevar, has been scratched. This murmur went up through the crowd. And it was funny because John Nerud was down at the racing secretary's office and saw Frank Whiteley walk in and didn't know what was going on. And he saw Frank Whiteley, walk out, and he heard, and somebody said, they just scratched Hedevar. and he looked up at Frank Wiley, and Frank Wiley didn't say anything. So he knew it was true, and he walked out, and he just got up, and he said, gentlemen, this race is over. And, I mean, there was no way. And Dr. Vega was able to get out there and set, you know, 24-48. There's no way he was going to beat him by then. That's why Manny Icaza had to go after him. But those were two unbelievable races, by the way. Both horses carrying 130 pounds or more. Equal the track record in the first race and break the track record. Not only did Damascus break the track record, it still stands 50 years later.
Amazing.
Mile and a quarter at Aqueduct still stands, 159-1.
Amazing.
So that was.
We don't do enough when it comes to. You know, we're so keyed in when it comes to Triple Crown, Steve, noting the and I always have a lot of fun in the lead ups to the classics, you know, kind of reliving and you know, think about Julie Crone this past Belmont 25th anniversary of Colonial Affair, you know, that kind of thing. We don't take enough opportunity to you know, celebrate and to a large degree educate you know younger generations of horse player and fan to these kinds of you know, less heralded. I mean, it's less heralded in this era, but I mean, the Suburban, as important a race as there's been in the history of the game the last 150 years.
I try to. I write as many.
You do. No, I know. Absolutely.
Possible, you know, and, but, you know, most of the comments I get, you know, I get a lot of comments from them, but, you know, most of them are from people who said, oh, I was there. That was a great race. So, I mean, most of it is the old timers that comment on it, and I'd like to see more response from the younger generation. But you know, the younger generation doesn't have a real sense of history. And I'm not talking about just horse racing. I'm talking about the history of the world and of the country. And as far as horse, you know, to them, you know, Cigar was an old-timer. I mean, there was no history before 1995. But it's just very hard. I think a lot of them can appreciate it, but a lot of them really can't. I mean, they just, you know, so you know, you always see these things on TV where they'll go out and they'll ask somebody, you know, who was the first president of the United States, and they have no clue. You know, I mean, there just isn't a sense of his history as much as they used to be. So, you know, you try to make it interesting. You try to, you know, give a different perspective on the sport, what it was like back then. And it was different. Because you got to remember, today's racing fan, they watch the races on their cell phone. They watch the replays. If they watch it on TV or they DVR it, they watch the replay 20 times. You know, they do trip handicapping and this horse moved here, this horse moved there. Back then, when you watched the race live, you never saw it again.
Right.
They didn't even have replays at the racetrack until like 1968. And that was a new thing. You never saw the race. I mean, there's still races. Like, you know, I mean, I'm a huge fan of Damascus. Ran in the set a track record in the American Derby. I've never seen that race. Never seen it.
Yep.
It doesn't exist. I mean, it's not there anymore. I think a lot of, you know, with Arlington, a lot of those films were lost in the fire. Dr. Fager's Vosburgh is gone. Naira lost that. That's gone forever. That doesn't exist anymore. One of the great performances of all time. But I remember at Saratoga, if you like, you watch the races, and then the big treat was to go to the National Museum of Racing the next morning. And every morning at 10 o'clock, you would go. You would either go upstairs or downstairs. I can't remember which one, but you go into a little room that had folding chairs set up with a big white big screen. And a, you know, like a 16 millimeter projector, an 8 millimeter projector, whatever it was, and they would show you the replay of the previous day's races. That was a treat to see the previous day's races back then. And another thing people don't realize is that, let's say if you wanted to go watch a race, and I'm just using this as an example, let's say Damascus is Woodward or his Travers. where he won by 10 lengths in the Woodward and 22 lengths in the Travers. You watch a replay of that. Go on YouTube. Watch any of those races in the 60s. Once a horse gets like four lengths in front, the camera leaves that horse and goes to the second horse, because showing the races back then was strictly about betting. So they would go to the second horse to see to see who's going to finish second or third. So you never see, you look at the Travers, you look at the Woodward, two of the most brilliant performances of all time, and you have never see Damascus cross the finish line. You know, the camera will pan after like in the Woodward, there was a photo, not a photo, but it was Buck Passer beat Dr. Fager by a half a length for second. And after they crossed the finish line, then way off in on the right part of the screen, you can see Damascus like galloping out into the turn. But you never see him cross the finish line in that race.
It's interesting.
Not just him, but any horse that wins by more than four lengths. They win by five, six, seven lengths, and the camera leaves them at the 16th pole or wherever. So it was a lot different back then. But for some reason, you were forced in your mind's eye to record that race. Now, maybe it might not be as accurate as you think it is in your mind, but your mind's eye recorded that race. And there was something special about seeing it live, knowing that you're not going to see it again. And you just see things, differently. You record it, your mind differently. It's very, and not only that, but you have to remember, everybody watched the races live with binoculars out in the grandstand. Nobody was in the back watching on TV monitors. Everybody, you know, if you didn't have your own binoculars, which most people did, you'd rent them at the racetrack. But, you know, there were no TV monitors in the boxes or anything like that, flat screens or nothing like that. You would just sit out there, and you'd have to watch the race with the binoculars. And if you wanted to remember that race, you better record it live, because you're not going to see it again.
That's a great point. And I could tell, you know, there was a period going back, let's say, to 2000, when YouTube started to, you know, really grow as a resource and a collection and repository. And, you know, there also were some unfortunate dust-ups, but stuff started to emerge that people had recorded on VHS and so forth, and people were so excited, Steve, when the word would spread on message boards, you know, that whatever race, you know, had turned up. And, you know, not the obvious things that were there, you know, quite quickly and established, but like you're talking about, you know, more not even second tier necessarily grade ones, but races that, you know, just hadn't been seen by the public eye in some cases in decades.
YouTube is phenomenal now. You could watch almost any race. You never know.
Well,
you know, you wonder who actually posts these races, but somebody has to find them.
You bring up, you know, there that's why I was mentioning the contention and the contentiousness, because there was some very unfortunate attacks on a one in particular that took some things that had been put on off unfairly, and they've never come back, actually. And the people that are, I don't want to get into names and so forth, but the people who were aware of what went on, they certainly remember. That was very unfortunate.
Well, you know, to me, the greatest invention, and I'll never forget, because a friend of mine, Peter Scott, who wrote for the Daily Telegraph in England, was the first one to get one. And I thought it was the greatest thing in the world. And I would go to, you know, England every year, and I was just so thrilled to go to his house. He had, and it was like in 1977, I think is when he got it, when it started coming out, was Betamax. Where it was for the first time ever, you could record something off your television set and watch it. And it was a big clunker of a big cassette that you'd put in. And you could actually tape a race off the TV and watch it over again. And the whole concept of that was so, you know, beyond comprehension that I thought it was like the greatest invention. And, you know, in 1975, King George, between Grundy and Bustino, was considered, actually it was a book called The Race of the Century, considered the race of the century. And I couldn't wait to go to England, not to see the races live, to go to see the Derby or Royal Ascot, but to watch the 1975 King George with Grundy and Bustino on Peter Scott's Betamax. And not only that, but when that Betamax came out, it was like $1,200. It was like it was absurd. It was well over $1,000.
Yeah.
For this Betamax. Then the prices start coming down and down, and then the VHS started coming, and the next thing you know, the prices kept plummeting, and they kept improving on it, and then Betamax became extinct. But when it came out, oh my goodness, that was, you know, because somebody who basically was weaned on watching a race one time and not seeing reruns to actually tape it off TV was, to me, the greatest invention I'd ever seen.
That's a position held by a lot. Steve Davidowitz wrote, I remember in Betting Thoroughbreds, that the end of it, that it was the VCR was the greatest tool for horse players since the advent of, you know, of speed figures, and that this was, you know, this was a huge. I've talked about this before. Remember when we used to order from the Breeders' Cup, you would order the 2-pack of race reviews. It's not that long ago, and you'd wait about 11, 12 days before Breeders' Cup it would come, and that was it. You were sequestered. You put yourself over the next 48 hours. You watched every race in the country, in the world, getting ready for Breeders' Cup.
Well, the thing is that they would show it in the media room, in the media center. So you'd go in there for dinner, and then they'd always put a corner of the room. They would have some, like, a couch or some chairs or so, and they had a TV set up. And Jim Gluckson would come along and put in the tape of, the horses for the, you know, like, I think they had, like, four races on one tape. Back when it was seven races, they'd have all the preps leading up to four of the races, and then another tape would have the other three races, or four and four, whenever they changed it. But the main thing is to watch all those European races that you never saw.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, to see the Ark, you know, again, and to see the King George and the Eclipse Stakes and the Derby and the Guineas and all these races, and to see who these European horses are, because you never saw any of those races. They were never on TV. So you would sit there, and I would be glued watching all the reruns from those two VHS tapes.
Absolutely.
And you'd be watching with all the
I still have them.
Media. It was fun.
I still got them. I've got like three or four sets that's sitting.
Oh, really?
I can't. You can't throw them out. I don't know. Tina browbeats me. I've still got my Betamax and probably 75 or 80. I can't throw it out. I just can't do it.
Oh my God.
I bought that in Cincinnati in like 1982.
Well, I could honestly say, by the way, that I would have, I would estimate I have, my den downstairs is completely littered. The shelves, the cabinets, everything is just filled with racing VHS tapes that I don't watch anymore. They're too expensive to bring it in. You know, one tape is $20 to put it on DVD.
I know.
So I got all of these tapes. And not only that, but tapes about horse, the tapes on Milreef and Nijinsky and all those old Burnham tapes, Chris Schenkel narrating with Buckpasser and Majestic Prince and all these horses, and show you all these old races. I've got the three Secretariat. I've got the three Secretariat Triple Crown races, start to finish, CBS shows. I've got every Breeders' Cup race from 1984 until I stopped doing it in 1990 something, 19 whatever it was. I've got every Breeders' Cup show, not just the races, the entire shows.
Sure.
I got all the Triple Crown shows all through the 80s and 90s. They're useless. They're just laying on my shelf.
Well, we're gonna powwow when you come up next week or 2 weeks. I'm working on something with the Turf Riders that came up when we were in Baltimore, and I went to Tom Law, and we're gonna create a committee, like a historic preservation committee.
Oh, that would be great.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, I remember the first thing that was done, all of Naira's old films. Naira had the whole thing, and then
yes.
They were just getting dust. They sent them to the Keeneland Library, and Keeneland Library has all the old Naira videos. I shouldn't say videos. I mean, you know, a lot of them were from 8mm, 16mm tapes. But if you saw the collection of tapes I have, just everything. I've got a 10-set VHS of not only every one of Zenyatta's races, but the actual TVG presentation of them.
Which is cool. I mean, that alone is...
They're on 10 videotapes. The Zenyatta's whole life on video. I got a tape on old Travers. I got a tape that has like 25 Travers stakes on there. Like I said, everything from the Triple Crown, horse biographies, history of the Arc de Triomphe, history of the English Derby. I mean, it's just amazing. All the
we're gonna create.
I don't.
We're gonna
do
something, Steve. We'll call it the Steve Haskin Collection, and we'll you and I'll. I need your help on this, and
well,
there's
listen,
a lot of.
I'm willing to give it to anybody who's willing to do
awesome.
Anything with it, because they're
all
not
right.
doing me any good. I can't.
No. We'll talk about it. I've got, and I'm going to work as soon as Saratoga starts with a chance to talk to Law. And there's been people that have volunteered in, you know, because this all came up because of what I get to enjoy at Pimlico. And those pictures I put out, the Jerry Fruitcoff and Jim McHugh photos, we want all this cataloged, and there's one place after another where this needs to be done, and you know, much like they've done in Hollywood with the you know the celluloid transfer to preserve film, and it fits that same area, and we've just drafted you. You're going to be chairman emeritus of the historic preservation committee.
Why not just chairman? Why do I have to be emeritus? I mean,
because you haven't you reached
20 years
because
you put me out the pasture.
Well, you've reached emeritus stage, haven't you?
I don't know. Whatever title you want to put on it. All I know is that I could fill cartons and cartons and cartons. I need a pickup truck to take them all up to Saratoga.
But well, I know that Joan.
If anybody wants to put them on DVD or somehow preserve them, it's theirs.
All right. We're going to talk about it, and maybe when I come down to, you won't be there though. I was going to say maybe when I come down. Although I cannot, that's a separate topic. I can't be at Monmouth all of Haskell Week. I'm going to have to, I don't know, jury rig something, Steve. Let me jump because we're going to go to Iowa, and Bob Nastanovich is going to join us, and we're off to a great start in the second half, and that includes conversations as well as the racing. I'll talk to you next week.
Okay, Steve. You take care.
I love it. Steve Haskin, everybody. Off to a big start here. Quick timeout. Bob Nastanovich next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.